This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, we take stock of the political landscape in the run-up to the November midterm elections with our veteran analysts, John Fortier and Jim Kessler. What are the issues and factors motivating voters as they prepare to cast ballots for their congressional and state representatives? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. According to a recent Reuters Ipsos poll, a majority of Americans are worried that former President Donald Trump's movement is undermining democracy. The poll was taken a few days after U.S. President Joe Biden delivered a speech on September 1 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, attacking the former president and his so-called MAGA Republican allies as an extremist threat. According to the poll, 58% of respondents, including one in four Republicans, said Trump's Make America Great Again movement is threatening America's democratic foundations. The former president is being investigated for his role in inciting a mob of his supporters to attack the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, in a bid to stop Congress from certifying Joe Biden's election victory and for his removing and mishandling of government documents from the White House, dozens of which were highly classified. Meantime, while gas prices have decreased significantly, inflation continues apace, which is likely to hurt Democrats since they control the executive and legislative branches of government. On the other hand, the Supreme Court's reversal of federal abortion rights in America is motivating women to register in droves, a development which may adversely affect Republican candidates. For now, many pundits are predicting that Democrats are likely to hold on to the Senate, while Republicans are favored to win the House of Representatives. The Senate is currently split 50-50, but Democrats can call on the vice president to break ties for certain critical votes. Democrats hold only 8 more seats than Republicans in the House of Representatives. For more on the unusual midterm election landscape and some pivotal races which may determine the balance of power, especially in the Senate and state houses, we turn to our veteran political analysts. John Fortier is political scientist and resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. That's a conservative think tank here in Washington. And Jim Kessler. He is executive vice president for policy at Third Way, a center-left policy group also based in Washington. And they join me via Microsoft Teams. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Carol.
Great to be back.
Well, John Fortier, let me turn to you first. As I said, many analysts say that this is a midterm election like we've not really seen in a long time. And as you have said at these microphones, midterms are usually a referendum on the president and his party. And if that were the case, given Biden's lackluster approval ratings, Democrats should lose seats in the House and the Senate. So with that, let me get you to weigh in on how you see the midterms overall at this juncture, both the Senate and the House of Representatives. How do you see those contests?
Well, I do think we have some indicators pointing in different directions, and I'm not sure that's completely sustainable. You're right. You point to the one hand where in midterm elections, the president's party tends to do badly, especially in the House of Representatives, the bigger body with more elections, and they almost never win seats, and sometimes they lose quite a few seats. And the losses are exacerbated if the president is unpopular. And Joe Biden, we can talk about exactly where his popularity is, but he's still really in not so great a place. He's in the low to mid 40s and job approval rating. That's definitely on the low side. He has come up in the last 2 months or so from a very, very low point, which he had dropped to earlier in the summer. But still, really, those signs would say, look, Republicans should have a very good day in November. But the contradictory signs are that we see some, certainly in a number of special elections, Democrats have overperformed in districts. We see some other numbers like the generic ballot, the way that people say they might vote for a generic candidate for Congress for Republican Democrat, looking a little bit better for Democrats. At the end of the day, I don't think we're going to see those numbers go in different directions at the end of the day. Either Joe Biden really is going to show some more strength and he's growing in popularity. We just don't see it yet. And the Democratic numbers are all going much better for Democrats. Or perhaps we will see things go back to more of the traditional midterm election. But at this point, forecasters have put the gains for Republicans, which they still expect in the House, to lower numbers than they had before, and still a very good likelihood that Republicans will gain the House. And you're right that many forecasters are saying Democrats have a slightly better chance of winning the Senate. You know, I think there, it's also the case that we have a very limited number of races. We always do. There's fewer Senate seats. But we really have a small set of races, and individual factors can be important there, and questions of whether Republicans had the best candidates and what the dynamics of particular states are really important. So I think we're in a bit of a schizophrenic zone here where the indicators look a little different in different directions, certainly better for Democrats than they did before. But I still have a hard time seeing certainly Democratic wins in the House of Representatives given the midterm election dynamic.
So we have a schizophrenic picture. Jim Kessler, as John Fortier said, let me just add a few things, picking up on what he said. A few months ago, people spoke of a so-called red wave. And then we saw a flurry of bipartisan legislation, the gun safety legislation, the Science and Chips Act, extremely significant in combating China, creating jobs here. Biden passed the Inflation Reduction Act, which is the largest climate bill in U.S. history that reduces also health and prescription drug costs, veterans care, et cetera. Nonetheless, I'd like to get your take. And then there's one more thing. We noticed that minority leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, said pretty much that he's not too happy about what he called not the best quality candidates for the Senate. You know, and he would like to be the majority leader. Nonetheless, how would you see the overall juncture for both the House contest and the Senate?
Well, Carol, I think we're in a completely different world than we were the last time we all gathered and spoke in July, in which we were predicting a red wave and really just dire political situation for Democrats. And I think it's now likely that the Democrats will keep the Senate. I agree with John, it'll be hard to keep the House. Just to put it into perspective, since the Civil War, so the 1860s, the party in the White House has won midterm elections, gained seats in the House 3 times. And so that's 3 out of 40. That shows how rare it is. But Democrats are doing a lot better. Look, this is what's happened. Normally, a midterm election is the referendum on how the party is doing and how the president is doing. Well, this time now it's a choice because obviously Joe Biden is the president, but just as obvious, Donald Trump is the leader of the Republican Party. And if you look at the intramural, intra-party battle within the Republican Party and who is going to win these primaries, well, it was almost a clean sweep for the Trump wing of the party. Their candidates won key primaries, particularly in the Senate, but also in the House. Well, now, and this is what Mitch McConnell was lamenting, I've never seen a bigger gap in the quality of candidates between the Democrats, who essentially are running mainstream candidates, and Republicans, who are running kind of kooks in some of these states. Now, in a lot of midterms, that doesn't matter. But in this one, it is starting to matter because instead of it being a referendum on Joe Biden, it is more of a choice between Biden and Democrats and Trump Republicans. And this gives Democrats a huge advantage. And then if you just add a few other things, gas prices have dropped $1.30 since June 14th. So that makes people feel better. And as you noted, Carol, Democrats had a flurry of success, often bipartisan, in July and early August, meaning that their legislative agenda, they really haven't left anything on the table. They look like a party that knows what it's doing, not a party in disarray.
Turning back to you, John Fortier, picking up on Trump's candidates, some of whom even Mitch McConnell said simply are not very good quality. And I was in Pennsylvania, as my listeners know, in August, and even the staunch Republican that I spoke with said that at least the gubernatorial candidate, Doug Mastriano, is too extreme for him. But we'll get into the state races in a minute. But back to the Senate per se, and in general, Trump's influence, and given his legal troubles, the investigations into the documents he took from the White House to Mar-a-Lago, and of course, the January 6th insurrection investigations, it looks like, at least in the Senate, given also the number of open seats, some of which are Republican, that could flip to the Democrats, for example, in Pennsylvania and Ohio. Give us a sense of some of those pivotal contests.
There are just a handful of seats in the Senate, and people can argue now maybe the field has expanded a bit, but I would start with 4 Senate races in Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, and Pennsylvania. 3 of them are held by Democrats, 1 by Republicans. If Republicans were to win 2 of those seats, they would have the majority, and that looked better for Republicans several months ago. I think Jim's right that there are some questions of candidate quality, you know, I still look at those numbers and the odds of Democrats winning three of those seats are slightly in their favor, but it's certainly not out of the question that Republicans win them. Many of those races are very close. I think one of them, particularly in Arizona, the Republicans are going to have a little bit of a harder time. I think we've got some competitive races. And then there's some question about some other races. You mentioned Ohio. I really can't imagine Ohio going to the Democrats. It's been a state that's really gone strong into Republicans, but the candidate, leading candidate, Republican J.D. Vance, is not polling so well. Again, I think we're going to have to see whether that is something of a summer hangover where ultimately we get back to more fundamentals in the fall where people line up with their parties. And I suspect that's probably true in some other places as well. But look, I do think Republicans have some places where they have nominated, yes, you could say Trump candidates, and some of that is that, but sometimes just also very inexperienced candidates, people who have not run for office. And sometimes those candidates are not as good on the trail as you think. They're also not as able to raise money, or they don't connect with voters as well. And they still may have a chance in the fall to make up for that, but they're in a lesser position. So look, I think it's a slight thumb on the scale for Democrats holding the Senate. Republicans would be happy to gain a seat and take the Senate, but it's not as if Republicans are going to lose a lot of seats or be in a worse position, but they're in slightly worse position than they were several months ago.
Jim Kessler, I had to laugh a little bit. John Forte, you said something about less experienced candidates. And once again, I'm going to hark back to my visit to Pennsylvania, our home state. Of course, my being from the Pittsburgh and the Western Pennsylvania. And we have Dr. Oz, this TV doctor. I'm sure he's very qualified, but he's really not a good candidate. He talks about crudités, which we know in Western Pennsylvania, that's called a veggie tray. And so that didn't go down too well with our blue collar Republicans. Again, we don't know if that seat will flip to John Fetterman. He's got a more of a blue collar appeal. But we also witnessed just this week in New Hampshire, once again, the Republican that won for the Senate seat, very Trumpian, we say, extremely extreme. He still doesn't acknowledge that the 2020 election was legitimate. Democratic Senator Maggie Hassan looks like she will likely hold her seat. Let's see. What are your thoughts?
I mean, New Hampshire is a great example because this is a race where the Democrat Maggie Hassan, she's a former governor, she's a senator. She's won every one of her races in her career by one percentage point. Right? She's only been in really close races. And this had the potential to be another really close race. New Hampshire is a difficult state to forecast, but Republicans nominated someone who just is not electable. And you talked about General Baldock. He's an election denier. Well, right after the election, he did an interview with Fox News where he said Biden is the legitimate president. So he reversed his position, probably because his pollster told him that if you hold this position, you have absolutely no chance. I think the Senate revolves around three states, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Georgia. I think Arizona is going to go to the Democrats. Mark Kelly is going to win that race, and Maggie Hassan is going to win in New Hampshire. Democrats need to win two out of three of those states. I think the one that they're most likely to win is Pennsylvania, flipping that race there. As Carol noted, we're both from Pennsylvania. Oz is not. So, you know, he's running from New Jersey. That doesn't sell too well. So it could really come down to Georgia and Nevada. In Georgia, Democrats have a strong candidate. Republicans have a very, very weak candidate, but that may not matter. In Nevada, I think it's more of two heavyweights going head to head against each other. But if you look at a state like Ohio, and John pointed out, the fundamentals really should go for Republicans there. If you see that state as you're watching an election night, that it's neck and neck, it means it is a very, very bad night for Republicans. And it means that in other places like North Carolina, Sherry Beasley, the Democrat running in that open seat, like it's possible there could be a surprise there. Possible there could be a surprise in Florida with Val Demings against Marco Rubio. She's an excellent candidate. He's a very strong candidate as well. So it feels like if you look at the special elections that have happened, you know, in the last couple of months, the upside surprises have been on the Democratic side.
You are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard. He's Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. We're examining the political landscape across the country as we approach the midterm congressional elections. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on most of your favorite podcast apps. You may also download the show from our webpage, voaafrica.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal listener, Professor Ndesa Ezekiel from Tanzania. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Gentlemen, let's turn now to just quickly strategy. We touched on this a bit earlier. So John Fortier, as you all noted, the reversal of Roe v. Wade, abortion rights are really driving a lot of people who maybe otherwise would sit out a midterm election, women in particular, even moderate Republican women. There have been many successes that may or may not affect people's voting. That is Biden's legislative successes. Nonetheless, there are challenges. How do you see both of the election strategies on the Democratic and the Republican side, which seems to be more trying to harp on inflation numbers, migration, the border security?
I think Jim put it well before. That typically a midterm election is about the incumbent. And I still expect the election will be about the incumbent. And I think Republicans historically have a better set of issues to run on and running on the fundamentals and the economy and how things are going and how it is under this incumbent. I don't think that's going to fundamentally change. I think perhaps all of these other factors you've indicated could be helping Joe Biden himself, and maybe we'll see him continue to gain in popularity. But I still have a hard time seeing Joe Biden with really low numbers and Democrats doing really well in the midterm elections. That just doesn't seem right. And if you look at Donald Trump, certainly has his challenges of popularity, but many of the head-to-head polls people put up between Donald Trump and Joe Biden show Donald Trump at least even if not winning in some of these races. So Joe Biden is the leader of the Democratic Party, and things are not going well in the economy. I mean, there are some mixed things, but certainly I think broadly speaking, people are unhappy with the economy. And that, I think, is something to run on that is much more tangible. These other things, I think, can be important. And I don't discount the Dobbs case, the abortion issue. But I think we've been running with that narrative maybe a little too strongly. Jim mentioned that the gas prices have moderated. Arguably, that might have been a more important factor for Joe Biden and his popularity. If that also continues, and we're not in as bad shape economically as we were in the spring, you know, that's something that I think is more helpful. So I think the fundamentals race is still a very strong case for Republicans to make. There's a party in power. Things aren't going well economically. That should help many Republicans candidates across the country.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, would you agree that the Republicans still have a better set of issues in the midterms and that it still is fundamentally a referendum on Biden? Or what do you make of President Biden's shift in tone, really making the integrity of our democracy an important issue and harping on what he sees? And many Democrats see, and I think some Republicans, the extreme direction in which the Republican Party is going under Trump's influence, undermining democratic principles and saying that the so-called MAGA, the Make America Great faction, which has pretty much overtaken the party, that that's extremely dangerous. To what extent is that resonating?
I wish that preservation of democracy was a big voting issue. It is not a big voting issue. So I'm glad that Joe Biden gave his speech. I don't think it's going to move the needle one bit in these midterms. I do believe that Republicans have three very good issues to run on: inflation, which is a problem for Democrats and is real; immigration and the border, which has been chaotic and has deteriorated under Joe Biden; and crime, which I think is a bit of a phony issue, but is an issue nonetheless. On the other side of the ledger, Democrats have an incredibly potent issue, which is the Dobbs decision and abortion, and also Trump. So just as we're talking about inflation, the cost of an abortion in many states in this country has gone from being several hundred dollars to 5 years in prison. Okay, so abortion has gone from being a constitutional right to, in many states, a criminal act in which people will go to jail. And it is hard to overestimate how visceral that feels to a lot of people. And if you look at, and I know abortion is not a women's issue only, but it is certainly a predominantly women's issue. If you look at voter registration since the Dobbs decision, in many states, far more women are registering, newly registering to vote than men. And so, again, if you're going to see an upside for Democrats in this midterm election, it could very well be women voters and some newly registered women voters.
I want to just add my two quick cents here. With regard to the Dobbs decision that overturned the federal right to abortion, Roe versus Wade, it was just recently that Senator Lindsey Graham, the Republican from South Carolina, introduced legislation to ban abortion nationwide after 15 weeks. So that could be a self-inflicting wound. We'll see. But again, both of you make good points. And with regard to immigration, there's no question that our immigration system needs to be fixed. But I've heard Jim Kessler say this before. This is a topic that both sides, but particularly the Republicans, have been using to campaign on. And there are legislative solutions, but there doesn't seem to be enough consensus. And some politicians would just rather campaign on it.
And that was underscored by the fact that, as the Associated Press reports, Republican governors have used this tactic of sending migrants to Democratic states without warning, including most recently the summer enclave in Massachusetts, Martha's Vineyard, where Florida Governor Ron DeSantis seems to be taking the strategy to a new level by using planes and choosing, of course, Martha's Vineyard. And he did not inform the authorities of their arrival. So it appears to be a political tactic, using migrants, as many analysts have said, as political pawns.
But as we close, John Forte, I'd like for you both to end on the significance of statewide races, the governor's houses, because these are very important positions that we neglect sometimes to discuss in depth. So how do you see the state races? What are you looking at? What are some pivotal races? Republicans have traditionally done very well. Democrats are only catching up, seeing the value, you know, of governorships and so forth.
Well, you're right. Governorships and also state legislators, essentially the legislature in each state, are important for the everyday governance of states. They're also important for political things like redistricting, producing candidates for future office. And so it's often important to follow these races as well. I think this is a case where not all governors are up in a midterm election. Many are this year because it's a big year. And there are a couple of places where Democrats are going to take seats for sure because Republicans had held them very unexpectedly, very Democratic states, Massachusetts and Maryland, which Republicans, again, had held against all odds, are now going to almost certainly go back to Democrats. Republicans certainly have some chances to pick up some races, too, I'd say in Kansas and in Wisconsin. I don't expect there's going to be a large shift in the number of governors this time, but it is something that often you see the results politically down the road. People who are elected now are often good candidates for Senate and perhaps even president down the road. So I think it'd be somewhat of a wash. And just like the Senate races, Democrats' prospects are slightly better than they were a few months ago because, you know, all the polling numbers have looked a little better than they did a few months ago. But other than those two seats for Democrats, they could certainly pick up one if they might be able to. But it's a lot of races are relatively competitive. And I think Republicans will probably pick up a few, especially those four states we mentioned. There are opportunities for both parties. So again, competitive race, but I don't think a big change in the numbers from where we stand today.
Well, I'll give you the last word, Jim Kessler. There are 36 out of 50 states that are electing governors. And as I've said, Republicans have done an excellent job of investing in local and state races to the detriment of Democrats who have belatedly begun to see how important these offices are, particularly for voting rights. And as John Fortier said, you know, redistricting, they generate candidates for nationwide office. Oftentimes, we've had so many former governors as presidents. And I'd like you, of course, to mention how you think the Pennsylvania governor race is going to turn out. What states are you focusing on that could make a difference in the balance of power at the governor level?
The states I'm focusing on are the ones in which, when we get to a presidential election in 2024, will there be an honest count of the vote, or will there be sort of a January 6th Donald Trump style stealing of the election and making up cases of election fraud? So the key states are Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Democrats have incumbents there that are running for a second term. Really, I think for the sanctity of our democracy, it's essential that Democrats keep those seats. Pennsylvania, I expect Josh Shapiro, the Democrat, will win over Doug Mastriano, who is really an extreme candidate. Gretchen Whitmer, very impressive governor of Michigan. I would give her the edge in her race as well. Evers is the governor of Wisconsin. I think that'll be a closer race, and it'll be nip and tuck. Georgia, you know, was another place where there was election shenanigans, but not by the governor and by the secretary of state, who are both Republicans there. So I don't think our democracy is under threat by who wins that race. Arizona is a place where you have an election denier running against a Democrat in an open seat. So I'll be looking at that one as well. And really, that's a coin flip, that race as well, too. I don't expect there's going to be too much changes between Democrats and Republicans in the governor's races. Yes, Maryland and Massachusetts will likely go Democratic because they've had Republican governors in a Democratic state, but that's to be expected. But those states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, are the keys.
All right, gentlemen. Well, you are the keys to our analysis of this very important moment. And we will be back with you because a day in politics is an eternity. So we'll see you perhaps next month to take the temperature of the midterms. For now, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. As always, thanks for a lively conversation. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.